and welcome to episode 195 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and I'm here with the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Our very own Eliza Doolittle, it's Tony Esmond.
You did really well to hold it together there, because I was trying to make you laugh immediately before we started.
Yep, I know.
Very well done, I'm proud of you again. I've been proud of you twice today.
Yeah, oh, thanks. And I was very proud of you last weekend, Tony, but we'll get into
that. Yeah, thank you.
In a second, because we have another guest this week.
Yes.
Yes, we are joined by the brains behind Afterlight Comics, who's the publisher responsible for titles such as Wendigo Wood, Ghost Island and Stay Awake, and even more to come, because seriously, they churn out loads of comics. Welcome to the show, Joey Oliveira.
Hello.
You're right, Joey.
Hey, Joey.
How are you doing, guys?
Good, man. Yeah, I did actually tell you before we came on that I thought you were a sick bastard. I may reiterate that later.
Yes,
that's my nickname, Joey Sick Bastard Oliveira.
And that's why he's more than welcome on this show. Yes, a lot of our listeners out there will probably know Joey's comics from his successful Kickstarter campaigns, which are always good. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
His numerous convention appearances.
Record-breaking
number.
Yeah,
just you wait,
people. You're going to find out in a minute, a little bit.
It's going to be a serious contender for the most cons done in the year.
There's got to be some kind of thing we could do.
I reckon Tom Ward could have a good...
Yeah.
Get in the Book of Records. Go in the Guinness Book of Records. Yeah. Most conventions attended.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have the conventions when I turned up.
Do you reckon our sponsor will ever get in the Guinness Book of Records?
Oh, we've got a sponsor.
We do indeed.
That's
our sponsor is Comic House.
Ever done. And, you're going so well.
This will be in the Guinness Book of World Records for the worst... advert
segue
for a sponsor you've ever seen. Actually, it's not. Actually, it's not. I think if people troll the library,
we've done terrible ones. Yeah,
but and God bless Comic House for sticking with us, because they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference.
Do you remember the segues we used to do where I'd say, "Have you ever nailed your knob to a bit of wood?"
Yeah,
do you remember those when we were in the early days? They were good.
And,
ones,
and that was
they?
Always to promote Chris Wild Goose's podcast.
It was. Yeah, you ever stuck a cactus up your ass?
Yeah.
Often. Like that.
Real classy way to sell your product, Tony. Real classy. But I tell you what is a classy way, and that's Comic House, because they have a huge selection of titles on their database. So if you've got loads of comics boxed up in your houses and you want to sell them, then you can list your book on there for free. And when you sell a copy, Comic House will only take one pence commission, which is brilliant in the self-published world where every penny counts. It's just another avenue to sell your book. And we always need them. But they also have an app, which is the be-all and end-all, and we talk about it every week. People normally joke with us that it's the Netflix for comics, because I've said it so many times, but it literally is. And
I said that too.
Yeah, they have loads of great digital books on there. We read it pretty much every week. Or sometimes I save it a couple of weeks, and then it's like having a pull list that just piles up a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that?
Yeah, often, quite... Fuck me, piles up. You can't get in the room for my pull list of comics I haven't read at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. You need to cut back on some of your pull list titles, Tony, which I think you unfortunately might be doing.
You're contemplating that, yeah.
I've pulled a couple of titles recently, that I was just thinking, what the fuck am I doing buying this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't want one of those titles to be the one that finally kills you when the pile falls on top of you.
I know. It's like being bullied in the school playground. I just keep going back to the bully and going, punch him in the face again, please. and I'll give you £3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it was going at one point. Yeah,
but you don't get that with Comic House. You get nothing but
just only get class with them.
Yeah, you just get nothing but warm hugs in the shape of comics. So what have they got on there at the moment?
Oh my God,
Daniel,
we've got Tales from Beyond Infinity issue one from the nerds that haunted themselves.
Nice. You're in that.
We're in that.
I'm in that.
Yeah, Vince is in that. Yeah.
Oh, nice. We gave them a good thrashing at that quiz.
Never let that go.
Listen, men. The complete Alice in Wonderland, The Light, Legendary Tales Spinners.
John Repium and Leah Moore, isn't it? That one.
The Light.
No, Alice in Wonderland thing.
Oh, okay. Let me see. It is. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, there you go. That's good.
Nice one. And
friends of the show.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely awesome. As a dude in sort of like a Batman style garb with two pistols, and it's called The Black Bat. The trade from Dynamite, so I'll be reading that.
That's good. That's a good series. I bought that when it came out. I actually quite like that.
Oh, nice one.
I'm not going to say that you've that as soon as I see a comic book, I think, yeah, Dan, I love that. No, actually, I do think that.
We think that all the time.
Yeah.
Once a week, we send something. There's usually someone getting something happening to them.
Yeah. Mashed up.
I mean, for
mashed
instance,
up. And we say, Dan, you'll like this.
Yeah. And if there's one title that, if you say to us, what's name one title that is pure Dan Butcher just through and through, I'd probably say Bloodshot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's true, actually. Mm. Yeah.
With comics, can you judge them by their cover?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. You've got to, haven't you? That's the way they sell themselves.
Dan, every week we post the covers we like. We're literally judging comics.
I know, but the content of, like, there's some I've picked up, like, wow, look at this fucking cover. It's like, I've got a painted cover, and you pick it up, and it's this dreck inside.
Yeah, there's some companies that are kind of known for that. There was a few Dynamite titles, and Xenoscope are known for that, aren't they? You think, oh, fucking hell, look, tits. Yeah. And then you open it up, and there ain't none. Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
It's not the case with Europe comics, though.
No, they're all pars.
Yeah. And thank you, Tony, for buying me and Vince that Masters of Spanish.
Oh, mate, I'm glad you loved that. I just thought...
Beautiful.
I bought it for myself, and it said, buy those two boys a present.
Yeah.
And I did, especially after I'd had an unfortunate weekend in Cardiff. It cheered me up by buying you it.
Right, we'll get into that in a sec, and that brilliant book. Yeah. Before you do, if you want to read any of those amazing comics we just read, as well as Awesome Comics 1, 2, and 3, then you definitely need a subscription to Comic House. It's only £3 a month, which is actually probably less than a weekly hard copy book in your local comic book shop. And we've all done it. We've all bought a single issue and just thought, what the hell did I waste my money on that for? So instead, put those £3 towards a Comic House subscription. There's a 14-day free trial if you're not sure about it. So go to comichouse.com and dive in head first. To this amazing world of small press and indie comics that we talk about every week. So there you go. But as we were saying, Dan, that Masters of Spanish, I've got it just here actually. I've got it right in front
That's
of me.
That's great.
Masters of Spanish comic book art. Tony Esmond very kindly gifted me and Dan. Written by David Roach,
One of the reasons I got it is I met David at Thought Bubble this year, because I had a conversation with him about he's writing a history of British comics thing, and he was chatting through about No Brow with me, and then I saw this, I thought, why haven't I bought this looks amazing. And it's written by him, and he's a really, really good sort of comics historian. He really knows his stuff. Really interesting stuff.
I saw the tweet that you tagged us in, and I sent a photo of me holding it wearing sunglasses with a sticker on it with a fire that says lit.
I know that Dan, you're so
extra. That went straight in the bank. That went straight in the bank, that one. There now.
I mean, but seriously, this is a beautiful book. And I will say, Joey, you know, in the sort of work that you like, you should definitely
see this bin up your street, man. It's got that horror, that sort of classic sort of Spanish artist, Argentinian artist sort of horror stuff that you saw in Vampirella and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, and there's creepy and eerie sort of covers in here. It's beautiful art book. Beautiful art
book. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that, Tony. I think this is a
pleasure, mate.
I had no idea existed. Do you know what I mean?
Shame.
Yeah, and another one that I just discovered recently. No, I'll save that for the shout outs actually.
I'll save that
for the shout outs, and we've got a few of them coming later.
Yeah, we've got a series of them.
Yep. But before we do, we've got a little bit of convention talk. We're just going to talk, and all of us are going to talk about this. We've got one to talk about, haven't we? We briefly mentioned it last week. Obviously, it was a timey-wimey show we recorded before we actually went to the show. But
it seems like ages since I've been chatting to you guys. It seems like ages ago, didn't it? It
has been for me.
Because Dan Butcher is well again, aren't you? You're all right, aren't you, my love?
Yeah, I was fine.
Splendid. Tom Dick doesn't refer to an activity he took up. It's rhyming slang for those who didn't understand what that meant.
Yes, but Dan's back now, which is wonderful. But we obviously were at Cardiff Comics Carnival.
I was sort of partially there.
It was a great day. So thank you to anyone.
It was good.
Because there was lots of new people who hadn't heard about the show. I certainly talked to a lot of people about what we do and the comics itself. Thank you to everyone that picked up Awesome Comics and just genuinely just talked to us about comics. It was just a great little event. I love these little events like this. You know, they're free.
We didn't do badly sales-wise. I know we don't normally talk about that, but we actually did quite well sales-wise.
Yeah, those small little events at the beginning of the day, because it's so quiet just before the doors open, you think, what's this going to be like? And then there's always one point of the day where you look around and you think, Jesus, this place is packed. and it was.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Yeah,
it was really buzzing. Another thing that was buzzing was Tony Esmond, because he was he was feeling a little bit poorly.
So I went out. I went because it's a long drive for me to get to Cardiff. So I went down the night before and got a nice hotel and all that sort of treat myself. And went out. I thought, oh, you know, I've got time. I'm gonna go in the bar because there was some like lodgy Masonic moosey thing going on, and a load of people dressed up. So I thought, I can't go in the hotel bar because it's too busy. I'll pop out. So, oh my god, what's that?
Sorry, that's my phone kicking off.
Daniel so, Butcher, how long have you been doing this show?
Yeah, long enough not to make an error like that. Apologies.
So he's doing it again.
He's Daniel.
Done he's done me again. Oh. He's done me again.
Sorry. Go on.
Anyway, so I thought I'll go out and get a bite to eat, and I literally walked across the road and went sort of first right, and there was a curry house. Fuck me.
Sorry, it's done. I'll send it off. He's done with his phone on this video's coming up.
Joey, we're really sorry about this.
Go on.
Yeah. Anyway, so I went for it. I had a Ruby Murray, and then the following morning, we were all texting each other, all excited with about the convention, and Vince texted me with, have you got the banner? And I'd normally send a long limb, and I just sent you a thumbs up, because at that point, I was wallpapering the hotel room.
Oh, jeez. Is there no one else that was afflicted?
Well, no, I was on my own. I just went for a bite to eat.
No, I mean, like anyone else? Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, just table for one. And so the following day, I said to Vince, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to die. And but I did make it. I just sat at the table. I think I was a little bit off my nut because I can't remember what happened.
Oh, there was some brilliant. Were some absolutely brilliant moments. and I don't mean I didn't. I took no pleasure in how sick Tony was. I was looking after him all day, making sure he was okay.
Were. Yeah.
But he was sort of sat there. I was stood up talking to people, and he was sat like on the bench behind me, just sort of going. Like that. And people would come over to the table. For instance, Ian Matthews, the legend, the man, he came over and talked to, you know, very kindly gifted me some books that I'm going to talk about a bit later.
Yeah.
And he was going, oh, I watched the documentaries about Steve Rude. And then we started talking about Steve Rude. And Tony went, oh, those documentaries are really good, aren't they? And he had a really lucid conversation for about 5-10 minutes. And as soon as it was done, he sat back down like...
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember them.
Poor Tony.
Yeah.
And then I started taking pictures of you, Vince, didn't I? That was amusing me as well.
Yeah, that's always fun.
That's got to be really bad, like staying away from home and then you get in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I reckon I left about 2 after 2 or something, and then drove back, and then wallpapered the car park and the services on the M4 again.
Yeah.
And then, passed out of my car. Like, if you saw me, you'd probably, what's that bloke drunk in his car for? And then I woke up and I felt fine. Drove home.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. No, right, yeah. It was a bit weird. Yeah. I had a bottle of water and felt fine. So it was a bit of a shame that it happened then. But at least I made it. I was a soldier.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone that was there. And and helped Tony get through it. Because I think, because it was a buzzing day, that really helped your sort of energy levels, didn't it?
It kept me going. That was a good thing about it. Yeah. Because we had Rachel Lee Carter and her little gaggle of gangsters on one side, and then we had who was on the other side?
Sean Jefferson,
yeah, who was good company as well, just sort of giggling. At one point, I remember just going off on one and being ridiculous, and she was just sort of crying into her hands because I think I went on my story about eating rhubarb again or whatever it was.
I know that one.
Yeah.
Oh no, beetroot story.
Yeah, the beetroot story. Don't start them off again. Yeah. But no, that was a great day. So if you see any of these little events like this crop up that are very much, whether they're comic zine fairs or whatever,
give them a go.
Make sure you pop by, because they're always God bless Josh and the gang, Josh Hicks, for setting it up, because they were walking around making sure that everyone was okay. And it was a great day, so thank you for that. Tony, you've done an event today, haven't you, Tony? You've been out.
Yeah, I've been to Ladies Do Comics today in Farringdon. Anyone knows Farringdon? It's sort of on the edges of trendy East London, sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of quite trendyville. And it's in I think it's the Word Centre was the name of this place. And it was all right. It was good. And there was a load of friendly faces there. Rachel Ball was there. The Good Comics crowd were there. Mike Medagley was there. I went along with Aaron Rackley from Little Heroes. Went along for just a sort of day out, really.
Mm.
He's looking for artists and writers, so I thought, that's going to be a good place. And he handed out his card and that. Self-Made for Hero had a table. Myriad had a table. There was a sort of Kickstarter table. Yeah, it was all right. It's a nice little function. They had a bed in the corner, which was a bit weird. If anyone looks at the blog post I've written about it, there was a lady laying on the bed doing her computer, and I thought that's quite amusing.
Done with that last week, Tony.
Yeah, I'd have had a little lay down.
Yeah.
I'm a snorer, though. That's the problem, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So, and it was, it was just sort of buzzy, friendly. And as me and Aaron walked out, some lady came over and said, do you want some cake? And I went, no, I'm all right, but that's nice. That's nice getting offered cake at the door of a convention, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. What sort of cake was it?
I just didn't really say. I didn't really ask her to elaborate, but it was very kind of it. Yeah. I said, oh, no, we're off now. And she went, oh, if you want to come back, there's some cake for you. And I went, that's nice.
It was like someone from the place. It wasn't just like some lady hanging around the outside.
No, actually. I was going to call the blog post a trip to the ladies, and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad you shared that with us, because that's quality. That's quality. Can't let puns like that go.
No. It's all right, isn't it?
Listen, they're looking for more chaps to join the group. So
yes, you were saying they did. Saturday was a sort of not a closed session, but it was sort of appointment thing where you come in and you sit down with them and you go through your comic and they say what's good and what's bad and what you need to do to get it published. And they were saying that the percentage wise, very few men came in and did it. And
this is a portfolio review.
Yeah, it's almost something like that. Yeah, like a review and like advice as well as the art. I think they talk to you about everything, every part of it. And I was saying, oh, we could have done with a few more blokes. And I was like, well, that's fine, you know. Because I think I retweeted it and put a message out on Facebook and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's not, when it says ladies do comics, it's not just for ladies. I think people make that mistake. They think, oh, it's just for ladies. But it's not at all.
They're totally just promoting the medium, aren't they? And really,
yeah, they are. And they're a big organisation now. They've got loads of clubs in the UK. I think there's one in India just opened. They're all over the place now.
They're doing good work. Yeah,
I would say there is probably a bit of confusion down to the name. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, they just need someone just to sort of say, no, come on. You know,
everyone's welcome sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you see any of these events in the future, no matter what your gender is, head along.
Yeah, exactly. And to finish up the Terrible Threesome, you've been to a convention this weekend as well, haven't you, Joey? You've been to an MCM, haven't you?
Yeah, last weekend.
Yeah,
Birmingham MCM. I'm just coming off a conflow a bit right now.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, it's been pretty brutal.
Is that a two-dayer, isn't it? MCM Birmingham, because that's the one. Whenever people talk about MCMs, obviously the London one is obviously the one that everyone talks about. But you don't hear so much spoken about how Birmingham and Manchester, etc., does, unless you're on like social media and people are posting, come and visit me at the table and stuff. What is the Birmingham MCM sort of feel like?
Birmingham's got the same kind of, all the same setup as London, you know, guests and all that stuff. But there is two shows in Birmingham. There's March and then there's one in October and November, so it must do pretty well for MCM standards to keep them going. But and for Comic Village, it is always mixed. This year, it was better for Comic Village, but I've been there. This year was my fourth time there, and the last three times have always been mixed.
Fourth,
and
I wasn't so actually going. Do you go both times a year then?
Yeah, because I've had new comics, you know, in between those times, so people come back and say, "Oh, what have you got?" I've got like two more, three more. So, there's that. But this year was better.
Nice.
So okay.
They got some chap who used to run London Super Comic Con to help out with the Comic Village. From what I've heard, that he generally is getting a lot better and a lot more organised and sorted out. Yeah, so that's good. I think it's a bit more creation as well, curation.
So have they got any comic guests in it? Do they have? I know John McCrae does a few, and he's a Birmingham boy, and he's on. He usually does the London ones.
Yeah, I don't think they had anyone at the Birmingham one. But in London, there was Frank Miller, wasn't there, in October?
Yeah.
That
was a big one. Not for Birmingham, no.
I know Gary Erskine does them as well. I think he does some of the conventions as well. And John McCrae. Yeah. I think they do quite well at them. If I was speaking to John McCrae, he would say, no, he does really well at them. Yeah.
I'd imagine that the big names usually do at a show like that, though, don't they?
I'm not sure this is all over, but that one contract I was sort of taking a look at is the fact they get, you say, right, I'm going to run £200 And then if you don't earn that, the convention pays you. If you earn over that, it's like, that's okay. What you take.
How
home.
Do they
so,
know?
Yeah.
Well, how much they take? I don't know. Perhaps they have to show
we'll
it.
Have a helper at the table or something.
But to be fair, if it was Frank Miller and like their queues ran the tables all day, and you go, actually, I didn't make the 200 quid.
yeah.
Stroll on, Frank.
Just came for a handshake.
Yeah.
So, was this the best time you've been to MCM? Was it one of your more successful ones this time?
For Birmingham. For Birmingham, yeah. But the best MCM I've ever done is Manchester MCM.
Oh,
last
really?
Year. Yeah, it was amazing.
How many times has the Manchester one taken place?
Was once done, a year,
it's only once, yeah. It's a strange one. Birmingham is on twice a year. Yeah, you know, it's quite mixed. But Manchester, I think it's because of that it is mixed. If it was only just on once a year, then you have people, maybe more people going and it not be too diluted.
Yeah.
Village and things like that.
Do you find there's a difference? Because obviously your books are very much horror-centred and, like, you know, that sort of stuff. Have you noticed a difference in audience and like how well you do depending on the area of the country? I mean, for instance, you know, horror, I would argue, I mean, not that I know, but I would argue that it may be horror might be more popular further up north than in the south.
Grim as fuck up.
Well, where it's a bit grim, yeah, I get you. This is just inbuilt racism, Joey. I'm sorry about this.
The darkest corners of the UK.
Yeah.
Edinburgh I do really good in as well. Edinburgh Comic Festival, which is actually next weekend as well.
Are you going to that one?
Yeah, I love that one. Always go to that
Me
one.
Too, dude. Nice. I should see you there. I'm at that one.
Sweet.
Yeah. It was saying how many shows you did. Was it last year, Joey?
It was the 2017, yeah. Yeah, I did 29 conventions in that one year.
29 conventions.
29.
I booked them all in 2016.
So, where's,
in advance.
Was that your first year then, 2017?
So I published Kickstarter for the first Ghost Island was in 2016, and then I started my convention run in 2018. Then
was that True Believers? Was that your first one?
True Believers was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you did 29.
So what was the,
it was pretty
what
much was the, one every weekend.
Yeah, what was the smallest one you did?
Oh, yeah, I'll never forget it. for all the wrong reasons. There was this one that it was like just one of those like car boot style comic cons. It wasn't,
right,
you know, like actual people selling comics. Stuff like
flogging
that.
Toys and shit.
And I got there and it was Rochdale Football Club Stadium. Got in there and it was all like in the bar was actually the Comic-Con area. The tables were the actual like dining tables that people would have their bar, you know, food on or something at your table. You wouldn't have been able
imagine,
to put a
I'm just imagining in a Rochdale pub. I've been to a couple. Yeah. I can't imagine they're, you know, the tables aren't sticky. There's going to be a sticky element somewhere along the ground.
Yeah,
oh, man.
I went to set up in a corner. I was like, no, that's for guests. And it was a certain S Club member table.
What's his name again?
Lee. No, it's Hannah Spirit. The Spirit, wasn't it?
That's the one. Yeah. And the guy from Primeval.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. I've just opened my fridge and he turned up.
Yeah, I've got to give everywhere.
10 out of 10 to his agent.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He or she is on the case.
She's been in EastEnders, though, isn't she now?
Hannah Spirit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why are you so up to date with soap operas, Tony?
I know about the Spirit. I know about her.
Yeah. So it actually got worse though because I was then led to the basement of the football stadium. That's where like the rest of us were kept away from the guests.
Oh no!
And it was like on the other side of the stadium, so people didn't actually know you were there. Probably there, and it was just sat there opposite like some pottery fella, and some action figures guy like a car boot.
This sounds like the worst day.
I was ready to pack it all in at that point.
And people wonder why we do autobiographical comics. Going,
So I guess that's the do the research before you turn up. I guess you didn't make that mistake.
Yeah, definitely. Well, because I'd already booked like 29 for that year. Yeah. Like, oh god, I've got a few of these, haven't I?
Yeah.
I think what I should have done is like ask, you know, people on the circuit, you know, beforehand, and you know, find out. But I didn't really know anybody, so I was quite naive and thinking, you know, it says Comic Con, it's a comic festival, all this stuff, and it's like,
well, you do though, don't you? There. I mean, I don't. Yeah. It's not until you start these shows that you really get to know the community, and it happens quite quickly that you get to know all these people. But certainly,
unfortunately, in some cases,
I said touch wood. I think we've seen it back a lot of those kind of like quick cash grab cons.
Yeah, the lives of our show, we've seen them disappear a bit. We talked about this before, didn't we, Dee? Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, what were some of the better ones, Joey, that you did? What were the ones that you would recommend that maybe people aren't, you know, not like the Thought Bubbles, or, you know, ones that you did well at, but people don't necessarily immediately think of?
It's pretty much is the bigger ones, really. London MCM is always fantastic. It's 3 days.
Are you doing that? You doing that in May or?
Yeah, doing that one. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah,
we'll see you there.
We're there, my friend. Yeah.
One of the things I've heard from people about getting into the MCM one is to pitch them that you're going to launch something or something big's happening at the event. If you kind of just relatively generic, oh, I just want to appear at the show, you're more unlikely to kind of get in. Now it's being curated. So.
Okay. Yeah.
So when I put on the sort of form, well, I'm going to be there. Do you think that was the right thing to put then?
Yeah,
maybe not for us.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, it is the big thing that's going to happen on the weekend, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
You got your trendy sunglasses. Are you going to wear them?
Yeah.
I was just looking at some photos of you in the woods, Vince.
Why? Now I know you're just talking about the fact that I went out for a lovely day at the weekend, and you're looking at my Instagram, but you just can't help but make it sordid, can you?
Yeah. We weren't the one in the woods, you pervert.
Listen, you city boys, you've never seen woods. Unless
I don't know what a tree is. I don't know what a tree is.
Creepy stuff going on in the woods. Wendigo Wood.
I tell you what, you've missed that kind of smoothness in this show, haven't you? Dan's bringing it back to style.
I read this yesterday and reread it again today. This is great. I really enjoyed this comic.
Thanks.
The depiction of the kind of the I'll tell you what, when you tell us a little bit about it before we get the scalpels out on it.
So Wendigo Wood is a folk horror comic series. It's basically about a retired war veteran who's searching for his missing daughter. He gets a phone call in the middle of the night one evening, and it's a woman's voice claiming to be his daughter. And he finds all these clues leading to this forest, which is then found out that it's Wendigo Wood. That's the basic setup. And if people don't know what a Wendigo is, it's like a half man, half cannibalistic monster based on folklore.
The Hulk used to fight one as well, didn't he? That's where I first came across the name. Yeah, that cover, the cover on issue 2, mate, is absolutely outstanding. That's one of my
favorites. I've not seen that one.
It's Chris Sheehan,
really, really nice.
Really great artist.
Yeah, it's really great setup. The kind of one of the Wendigos, I'm not sure if there's multiple, it very much reminded me of that film with Ralph Spall. Do you remember the
The Ritual?
Oh, I've not seen that. Creepiness. I want to see that. Yeah,
great. Nice. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah,
that's really good. But he kind of got that same kind of feeling of the kind of the woodlands, and it was really well done. Very atmospheric. This is the second one I read. The first one was the Folk Tales of the Cryptid, and you certainly get that kind of folktale-y kind
Jesus
of...
Christ, man, that's twisted.
Yeah, that was great.
I remember I got sent it, and I apologize for not reviewing it. I just didn't have time at the time. But I remember John Freeman sent it to me, and he said, this might be up your street. I'm finding it difficult to look at. And not in a way because it looks horrible. It's a very beautifully drawn story, but fuck me, it goes there, doesn't it?
He got six pages to, you know, create an impact of a story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you've done good.
Yeah.
So presumably your interest, you got a big interest in kind of folklore and...
It started off from like a zine submission I did for Frisson Comics based in Liverpool as well. They're really great guys. They do horror as well. And they, like, they're always open for submissions for, like, a quarterly zine. And they had open for, like, a creature feature. And it's like you come up with, like, a six-page submission, black and white. And I was just thinking of what, like, all these, like, creatures or monsters that you could do and something a bit more unusual that you don't really hear of. Yeah. And I was just, like, doing all these Googles about monsters and folklores and then came across, like, cryptozoology, which is basically creatures that exist but can't be proven, you know, kind of thing. And it was, like, based on, like, this Missouri Sasquatch creature. It's a kind of bit like Bigfoot, but it's quite well-known in Missouri. And that was submitted. And then I got, like, a taste of, like, making a six-page short. Then I was, like, challenging myself to do something beginning, middle, end in six pages, which was really fun. And so I did three more stories and got them coloured. And then, yeah, that's how Folk Tales of the Cryptids got formed. And then it was a massive, well, great success on Kickstarter. Because I found out, like, you know, there's a big audience for, like, people who like folklore and legends and stuff. And
huge. That's how, okay. Absolutely.
That's how Wendigo Wood happened, really. Then it was like, oh, what?
I was going to say, was it because you enjoyed writing the tales in folk tales that you thought, oh, maybe I could make a longer form story out of this?
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, because I must say, when we talk about the ups and downs of anthologies and stuff, but folk tales is certainly one that. There's a consistency. Yes, there's different sort of art, but the stories creep you out every time.
Yeah,
they're probably, you know, there's a real nice balance. How do you find writing, you know, because you wrote Ghost Island first, which is a longer form story, isn't it? How did you find going backwards in a way? Because some people start with anthologies and then work to a bigger comic. How did you find going from a longer form comic to writing shorter anthology stories?
I think it taught me a lot of discipline going into the anthology because it's only six pages. Ghost Island 1 ended up being 44 pages in its first issue, which, you know, is a lot of money for, like, artist fees and printing fees and things like that. And that's something, you know, I didn't learn. But the first issue, it's like 25 pages. We hadn't even got to Ghost Island yet, so I was like, oh god, I'll have to extend this. And I think first issues are usually overly extended anyway, so it's like 40 pages. So it was a real challenge going into the folk tales. It was just personally, that book was just a challenge to me to do six page short stories to try and, you know, hone my storytelling in and do stories like beginning, middle, and end, and just like that. But it's good. Ghost Island's back to 25 pages now, so I've evolved in that sense and, like, being self-taught some discipline. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea, and it's a good idea for people to do that, because I certainly, you know, you think about just writing the full page script when you, you know, the full 24 page comic or whatever, but, and I have slower pacing, but I've started writing some shorts, and I remember hearing on a podcast someone, I can't remember who said it, they sort of said, you should be able to tell any story in the world in 4 pages. You should be able to get that across, no matter how quick it may be. But you should be able to get the beginning, middle, and end in 4 pages.
Yeah, it's quite a common thing they say when you pitch in 2000 AD, don't they? That's one of the things they say. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But it's very tricky to actually try that, you know, and get the balance of it. It is a real... For anyone out there who's... it's a good writing test. And it's really successful. I've written a couple of 4 pages that I'm going to be working with artists on that I'm really pleased with. And other ones, it's hard to get that balance, isn't it, of the story.
Yeah.
You know,
anyone starting out, I'd just say, like, highly recommend start from, like, a shorter 6-page, 4-page zine submission. Don't try and go all in with idea.
That's why these anthologies are important, I think, Joey. And I do. They're beginning to disappear a little bit. We're not seeing so many anthologies. When we first started the show, I remember we had the Dirty Rotten Comics guys, and we said that they were the lifeblood of the small indie press, weren't they?
Yeah.
And you had quite a lot, but a lot of them are gone now. I mean, Reads by Avery Hill and Dirty Rotten Comics is gone, the Dead Singers, that's finished now. I think we're left pretty much with the 2000 AD ones, really.
And, well, I mean, there's certain stories that certainly people might not they might miss out on. For instance, things like 100% biodegradable constantly happens. That's always there, but people might overlook it. They might, which is a shame because there's probably.
Would you say that with the advent of Kickstarter, rather than someone saying, "Right, I'm going to do a 4-page comic and put this into an anthology and see how it goes," you can kind of like pitch an idea on a Kickstarter, do your 20, 30, 40-page comic, and then it gets made when it reaches the total. See what I mean? You don't have to go through those kind of training wheel steps if you want. And I mean, to be fair, I've backed Kickstarters that have sounded great and looked great. And when the products turned up, I was like, oh God, they really needed to.
Yeah.
There's not much here, really. Because like they say, if you can tell your story in 4 pages, you've got that down, the whole story, beginning, middle, and end. But when you kind of like 30 pages, you can kind of lose your way a bit.
Yeah.
Especially people who start off with even more than that, they think, "Well, I'm going to do a graphic novel around this," and it just becomes a rambling mess. Yeah,
and certainly with like short horror stories as well, they have to have the sting in the tail. There's always they've always got to have that sort of like punctuation at the end, which doesn't have to have it. The great thing about horror, it doesn't have to have some epic here is the murder happening in front of you. A lot of these ones, and certainly in folk tales, it ends. Just seeing a monster behind a person, and
the horror is ideal because you can end on a downer, you can end on an upper, you can end on a cliffhanger, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to go to another one. You know, a superhero story, for example, is much more difficult to tell as a four-parter.
Yeah.
It almost has to be something else. It almost has to be a horror, or it has to be an autobiographical, doesn't it?
In order to do a mashup of a genre, like a crime and superhero, and something else. One thing I kind of equate it to, I don't like kind of putting films to comics, but a lot of horror films have like a really strong concept, but they've got like half an hour of storytelling and the rest of it is just padding crap.
Running around.
Feel like you could kind of like do three films in. There's that one where the girl disappears when you turn on and off the light. And that's a creepy little kind of image. But then they tried to kind of pad it out to an hour and a half film. It's just like you kind of got nothing here. But that's why I like kind of like the short sort of hits, and especially with the anthology here, is great for that. Yeah. That first one is so bloody creepy.
It is.
There's a kind of young lady with kind of kid up in the cot, and the baby monitor's going off, and she goes up there, and it's not going well.
It's not going well.
Yeah.
It reminded me of how on TV we used to take chances with horror as well. Just stuff like, do you remember when the sort of Robert Holmes, Doctor Who period, you know, you got the Talons of Wang Chiang and you've got Pyramids of Mars, and that's fucking frightened the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
You know, Seeds of Doom when the geezer gets turned into a plant. I still remember seeing that.
People may laugh about it now, but the Sylvester McCoy, Bertie Bassett. That is frightening.
The one he did Ghost Light, that fucking that was fucked up, man.
Yeah.
I would say a lot of Doctor Who and the original Star Trek series, most of it is space horror. They go somewhere and there's some fucking horrible messed up thing happening.
Yeah.
And they've got to kind of work it out or get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's an interesting sort of segue as well, because I noticed, Joey, you haven't really stepped into space horror, which, to be honest, a lot of people is their go-to in comics, certainly with the Alien and Aliens and all of these kind of things. But your stuff is, dare I say it, it's all very grounded in some kind of way. You're doing folk sort of tales. You're doing, you know, Ghost Island is, you know, like Jurassic Park meets The Shining. And you've got Stay Awake, which is your new one, which I've just had a look at today, actually, just from the Kickstarter. That looks brilliant. And that's dealing with sort of a sleep... night terrors and things like that, isn't it? Tell us a bit more about that, because what I find fascinating is you don't go to like the space and the sci-fi. Yours is very real worldy sort of stuff. I mean, Stay Awake is an interesting one to do as a comic as well, so tell us a bit about that one.
So originally it started off as a horror stage play that I wrote. I was really interested in trying to put like a horror play on. I'd seen The Woman in Black, I'd seen Ghost Stories in London, and it really inspired me to write like a stage play of my own. I was going to put it on.
Why is there not more horror theatre? I was talking with a friend about this the other day. I would have thought horror theatre would be amazing.
You got Jersey Boys.
I went to see the Women in Black stage show, and that's genuinely creepy.
That's great.
That's really well done.
Yeah. Really good.
They do it. There's, I mean, in London, it's like the permanent... Woman in Black is the permanent residence. Ghost Stories has come back now. They did have Let the Right One In London at one point as well.
Oh, nice one. Okay.
Really? Okay.
They've got... what have they else got?
They've got one... they're doing a stage show of Night of the Living Dead, which I've been eyeing up tickets.
Oh, sweet.
What, is that in the UK? Because I always think that would be an amazing... You know,
it's in London. I can't remember the dates, but it's coming up.
Oh, brilliant. I might have to check that out.
Yeah.
They do stuff at like the... what's it? The London Dungeon. They do like little plays there as well. I've been to a couple of things there where you walk around and the actors are all around you. They're quite cool. I quite like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what inspires me is just like the whole immersive experience of it. You know, how you know, anything can happen and you're just sitting there. But it started off from that, and it was a script that I had just laying around, and I revisited it and thought, well, let's try and adapt this into a comic. So basically the setup is a psychologist is forced to revisit three haunting cases of his former patients who have all experienced sleep disorders in one way or another. One's like sleep paralysis, one's like night terrors, and each issue goes into each experience of that and flashes back to the psychologist speaking to the patient. This is all also going back to the present time where he's being investigated by a detective because all of the patients have died under suspicious circumstances. So you get to that at the end of each issue, and then it's just a 4-issue limited series as well.
Okay.
Wow, I mean, that's immediately, you've got your perfect sort of horror setup, which is, I think you have in all your different stories, actually. There's the brilliant, you know, you should be able to, with a horror story, you should be able to sell someone on just, right, here's a psychologist going back to three haunting cases about night terrors or something like that. And then you can tell immediately, oh, that's something I want to check out. Yeah. But going from that to then getting artists and stuff, what was that path like?
For finding an artist for each story, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a different artist for each issue then?
So as I've gone on a bit more, I've started using like an artist that I'm familiar with or like the style of.
Yeah.
So Folktales of the Cryptids was another big thing in like audition process for artists to see how their styles work and what they're like working with as well. Because Folktales of the Cryptids, they had over like 12 different artists involved. So you had a different artist for each story, also a different colorist for each story as well. Different cover artists. So there's so many people involved and so many plates being juggled, deadlines and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm doing an anthology at the moment, and literally I've got two post-it notes so I remember who's drawing each story. Because even that I can't remember.
It's been quite easy really finding artists with like the styles that I like, because I just post in either a Facebook group. Facebook's really been the big fan of artists that I like. I'll give a shout out to Connecting Facebook Comic Artists and Writers. That's a really good one.
Yeah, I've recently just joined that one. It's great.
Oh yeah. So I put like a small little pitch of what it's about, genre, and then I'll post some reference pictures of the kind of style that I'm trying to get at, and then people, not everyone, but message you their portfolios and their styles, and hopefully quite similar to what you're looking for. But it's been quite easy, finding what you're looking for.
How do you find the negotiating the payment thing? Is that do they come to you with an amount, or do you have to offer them, or are you getting more into that, or more able to do it with them? You know.
So what happens is I pay whatever page rate the artist says. I won't bang them down or knock it down or anything like that. If that's your page rate that you want to charge, then that's, you know, that's, I respect that, and that's totally fine. And so if the style's good, you know, I'll pay it. And basically every page they finish, you know, I pay a pay by page kind of thing.
Yeah, that's not a bad way of doing it, I think. Yeah.
We've signed a collab agreement, and you know, that's the rights of mine kind of thing, and we pay the page.
It's a work for hire thing. I think it's important that you make that clear sometimes. I think, you know.
An incentivization for artists to keep chugging along. Like if you give them the whole amount up front, it just kind of
I wouldn't do that for a new artist.
No.
It's just too risky. You see so many horror stories. It's just, you know, it's not good for either party, really, is it?
Yeah, I've said that to people I've worked with, don't give me the whole amount up front, because I've got no... I'll do the work, but when I'm doing page by page or like every three or four pages, I've got a real incentive to kind of get my foot down and get it done.
But from a a writer's perspective, I mean, some artists, like when they're working on pages, they'll show you like sketches, they'll show you page layouts, and you can see that they're obviously doing a lot of work.
Mm.
But you'd still sort of say, you know, do you ever have that sort of like, oh, I you're doing a lot of work on this. I kind of want to give you some money for it, but.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? At the same time,
I think you've got to stick to the page rate, haven't you? I know what you're saying there, dude. I think exactly. Yeah. So it's what going back a little bit to what Pat said when he was on the show is we don't get any paid in comics for research, do we?
Exactly,
and it's kind of like the preparation, you know, the character, what they're going to be like is almost part of that, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
I think perhaps we should do, but it's just not.
It's the same way, like you thumb out a comic if I'm doing it for someone before I've even begun drawing it, and there's a bit of change in there, but
yeah,
I can't do those comic pages without those thumbs, but they're unpaid. It's just kind of part of the project.
I think you're right about the finished project. Sometimes you get an artist who's a bit slow, and if you're paying an artist a certain amount, sometimes it's not always within your ability to pay. So for example, they're going to get all 20 pages done in the last week. You might not be able to pay them all 20 pages in that one go. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes it does take some sort of spacing out, I think.
There's a deadline in the collab agreement for, the artist. You know, before they sign and say, can you make this deadline? And they'll, you know, say, yeah, I'll sign it. Or, add a bit extra time. Just be, you know, honest with me. And, you know, if you can do it in that time, then fine. You know, it's just see what ballpark we're in so we can work together on it.
Yeah. I think you're right, man. Yeah, completely. I think what I've just done as well, I don't know if this is anything anyone would agree or they've done before, is I'm doing a sort of anthology, and what I've done is create a Twitter group so that everyone knows where everyone is in their stories.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's sort of updating each other about, you know, page size and what, you know, what you're doing around lettering size. And, you know, you just, to be fair, I thought that helped a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also that sense of like
people up a little bit.
It's sort of not a kick up the bum, but it's not like everyone's competitive. But when you're seeing other people's work, you're like, oh, right, I'm going to step up my game on this next thing I'm going to do. Do you know what I mean? Is that that friendly competition?
Yeah, and there's a little bit of the community to that as well, isn't there? Yeah. You know, we're all in this together.
You don't want to be that person letting the team down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want to get bullied online, there's a couple of Facebook groups I can send you to. But
I mean, I must say, Joe, like, even though you started fairly recently, you've churned out quite
impressive. Yeah, you put a lot out, man. Yeah,
yeah, that's good.
You put a lot of books out, which is very impressive. I mean, there are some people, and this is me, part of this. I'm basically saying, you know, just trying to get the fourth issue of their series done, and like, you know, you've got several different titles on the go. Are they all mini series, or do you have like is one of them like an ongoing, shall we say?
So Ghost Island was originally hoping to be, when I was quite naive, it was going to be ongoing. It's going to be issue 10 or issue 20, you know, all these grand ideas, kind of like this big world. But obviously you've got to be realistic with those kind of things. So it turned into a six issue comic. That's where, sorry, five issues now. Six. Yeah, but it was originally, you know, when it was 40 pages, we had to cut that down because it was just too much money to raise and each Kickstarter, you know, all the page fees. So we extended it to six, and then we're back to like 25 pages now. But Wendigo Wood, that's four issues, and Stay Awake's four issues. I'm just trying to do series that are just four issues now, so it's not too much of a buy-in for somebody who's like, issue four is coming out and they got to buy the previous three. You know, you can have like, you can buy a trade in that point, or it's just because it is indie, some people don't know when the next issue is going to come out and like that. So it's, I'm doing it at a rate now that we can probably get a series finished in just over a year, so I'm happy with that. I don't want to keep dragging people along too much, you know, who are invested in the series and who's interested. It's like, kind of thing.
Yeah,
cool.
I mean, you are testing your different sort of writing muscles as well with the different sort of stories. Are there going to be more anthologies like Folk Tales in the future, do you think? Did you enjoy that so much that you're like, oh, I'm going to do this again, I think?
Yeah, definitely. I've been thinking about it. Just trying to focus on finishing Wendigo Wood now, so I don't want to start any new series now until I've boxed off that Ghost Island will be finished this year. Yeah. Wendigo Wood will be finished this
because
year.
Because you've got a kickstart for Ghost Island coming later in April, haven't you?
Yeah, April 30th, that one.
Yeah, and the cover looks amazing. I saw the you also did like the countdown to the cover reveal, which I quite like. You really are. You're keeping the momentum with the stories, aren't you, for the people that are following these stories? You know, you're keeping people engaged.
Yeah.
That latest cover looks badass, man.
I think it's wise to avoid April as well, because we're seeing so many Kickstarters dropping in April at the moment. I think to head towards the end of April makes sense, actually, as well, dude. Yeah. I mean,
go on, man. The only reason I'm not doing it earlier in April because I'm fulfilling a Stay Awake's Kickstarter at the moment.
Oh, okay. Just, fair enough.
I've just boxed another 50 off today, and I only fulfill a Kickstarter rewards ahead of starting the next Kickstarter, if you know.
Good
what
idea.
Yeah.
Just base that out. Otherwise, people get the hump, don't they? On. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are you a long term comic fan? Are you? Is
no, pretty much. Three years ago when I first started making comics, it was the first time I started reading comics, really.
Interesting. Are you a horror novel fan as well, then, are you?
Well, I started off with Walking Dead. That's what really got me inspired into making comics. You know, that grounded way of storytelling. I know it's zombies, but it's still, like, in a grounded world. Things like that. Outcast as well.
Did that come from the TV series to go to the comic or
Walking Dead?
Yeah, what made you think I would go for a comic?
I just had friends recommending it, actually, who weren't really into comics either. But they were like, oh, you should check out The Walking Dead.
Yeah. No matter what people think about The Walking Dead or what it's become, or, you know, whether you like the film, people will probably just immediately think of the TV series now rather than the comic. Look, no matter what your opinion on it, that series, that comic book series, has done important work for comics, because so many people, whereas there's us who, you know, there's some of us who got into comics in the 90s, there's some of us who got into comics in the 70s or whatever, there's people that are in comics now
50s. Because
or the 20s if you're Tony,
or the hieroglyphs.
Yeah, I saw one of those moving picture movies.
All right, I started that joke. Went out of control there.
But The Walking Dead, you know, we are now at that point where there's a wave of people who are in comics now and making great comics because of that series. And
it's the one you can give to people and they can go. Yeah. If they don't know anything about comics, you give The Walking Dead trades, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, and there's a reason that I collected that series for a very long time, because it's bloody well made.
And it's consistent. I think with the Adlard run, it's consistent. It's slightly decompressed, isn't it? You know, but you get used to the pacing of it, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's another trade come out this week, isn't it? I don't know what number trade they're up to. It's got to be, fucking 30 or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is that just going to be they do that till the ratings drop or whatever it is? Or just,
presumably.
I think Kirkman's got an end for that.
Yeah. Well, Kirkman, I mean, obviously he's big business now, but one of the things I do like about him, I mean, he genuinely loves comics.
Yeah,
I think even though he's...
That really came through on that Image documentary. I didn't really see that coming. And I thought, of course, Kirkman.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff he's done. And he kind of brought the group back together.
Have you branched off into anything else? Have you tried the Hellboy universe, for example, or anything like that? Swamp Thing?
It's just finding them, really. I went into... After Folk Tales of the Crypt, people kept saying to me, oh, this reminded me of Tales of the Crypt. I was like, oh, what? I honestly hadn't heard of Tales of the Crypt. I was like, oh, God. And then got into all that, the series, and then the comics, and loved them as well. Just like
creepy and eerie and that sort of thing, if you can pick up some sort of House of Secrets or House of Mystery or something like that, they're great comics as well.
Yeah.
They're like, I always describe, because you can get they do the showcases, the black and white. If you can find a sort of cheap one of it, and it's like picking up a big like phone directory full of the Outer Limits or the Twilight Zone stories, fast twisting the tale stories, and they're so written by some of the greats, you know, Gil Kane and all these sort of people were drawing them, you know, some brilliant stuff in there.
I mean, and also, even though you're like, oh, I've only got into comics the past couple of years, there's part of me that's quite jealous, because now you're discovering everything for the first time. That's just the best. What's some of the stuff that you've liked? You know, obviously, as soon as you get into the convention scene and you discover this community and stuff, You discover some great books. What have been some of the highlights in terms of like meeting creators and discovering new work and stuff for you?
Well, in 2016, and about April it was, for Edinburgh Comic Festival, when I was first started getting into comics, and coming up with idea for Ghost Island, I went up to Edinburgh on my own to check out the festival, and went to the Comics Village, and booked up the courage to like go up to a table and start trying to speak to some creators, try and get some advice and things like that. And I met Dave Cook for the first time.
Nice. Yeah, he's dude.
He was just so kind and really, really great to talk to, and like it's been an inspiration to me ever since. Really, of what he's done, and you know what
he's a millionaire now, isn't he? About. I think.
Oh, yeah, living the life.
He's a millionaire. Yeah.
And I was that guy that was like, "Oh yeah, I'm making a comic myself," like that. And then,
but actually, to give you credit, dude, you said it. And now you've got
and you've done
comics.
It, yeah. Like a lot of people, and like most people, we meet at conventions. Oh, I'm thinking about making a comic. Yeah, right, mate, move on.
It was nice. It was nice because, like, the following year, I managed to get in at Edinburgh Comic Festival, and I was there with Ghost Island issue one. And
then nice.
Went over to Dave. Was like, yeah, I've got to say what it's, you know, memory.
What did Dave do? Did he go, "Who are you"? Did he say that?
Yeah. He probably pretended to know who he was. Yeah. But I've been there ever since, and it's just been such a great convention. It's really nice to like go back and, you know, see where it started.
I've literally just booked my hotel today, so I'm looking forward to going to that. I've not been to that one before, and I really like it. It's great to see. It's a really there's a real creative buzz to the place in there. Yeah.
There is. Yeah, there's a massive comic scene up there. Like loads of really passionate people about comics. It's just great. Yeah.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. Cool.
Oh, that's gonna be quality.
So, anyone else you can think of that you've met? Any other comics that have sort of sparked you? You know, you've picked up conventions and stuff like that.
Blue Fox Comics are always good. Sam Beck's his stuff, like the rate he put out his comics as well. It's been an inspiration to me. It's like, oh, I need to like do some more as well. Lyndon White's.
Brilliant. Well, Ian Ashcroft couldn't have lived far from you.
Yeah, I know the Last Thought Bubble. Yeah, I've worked with him on some pinups for Ghost Island. some Ghost characters, cool. Some concepts. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good egg. Yeah, top bloke. Yeah,
nice. Like back to Kickstarters. Obviously, you've done a fair few Kickstarters now. What everyone wants, it seems to think that I'll go straight to Kickstarter to fund my book. What are some of the sort of just basic tips you would give someone? Because you run a nice, tight, simple, effective Kickstarter that just gets all your books funded, doesn't it? Really, you've had them all funded through Kickstarter, haven't you?
Yeah, everyone's been on Kickstarter now. Yeah.
Oh, nice work, mate. Yeah, that's good.
I'll be my Ghost Island. Next one will be the 10th Kickstarter.
Fucking hell. Do you, when you're not doing a Kickstarter, do you just sort of self harm just to keep up the adrenaline? Or...
I'm fulfilling all the Kickstarter books. Sending them out.
Yeah. I mean, you've had learnings in terms of like creating these books and getting in touch with creators. But what's been the learnings from obviously the first Kickstarter to the 10th?
First Kickstarter, learning to. Find the audience and, you know, find the audience to read the book. The first Kickstarter I ever did was Ghost Island 1, and it started off, well, it finished with 66 backers. With funding of like £600. Yeah. And little did I know, well, I think if you're going to do the first Kickstarter, the best thing to do is try and front up as much as the art cost as possible. And have the cost of the print run fund for the Kickstarter, just to, you know, have that audience for the first issue, fulfill it, and then the second one you can, you know, ask for a bit more money and like gradually increase it each time. Because like the first one, I just lost so much money on, like, it was I'd never done my calculations for international postage right or print, and because it was like a perfect bound book as well, because it's 44 pages, it was heavy, and it was all these things you didn't really think about.
How do you find the percentage of I don't want the exact figures, but from a point of view of you do a Kickstarter, you sell, you know, you so many people pledge, you know, how do you find that compares to the amount that you then sell at conventions? Do you sell a lot more at conventions, or do you find it's just, you know, a few compared to how many people pledge, or do you know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah. As in, like, sell more at a convention than a Kickstarter.
Yeah, because you then obviously you have more printed, don't you? So you take them to conventions. Yeah. Do you find that you sell a lot more at conventions compared to people who would pledge, or?
It's kind of a good balance because a lot of my audience is in America now.
Okay,
it's like 65% is in America because of like all that folklore. It's quite very American. So yeah, but there's a big audience for it in the UK circuit as well. So what really happens is if I'm at a comic convention, if somebody buys a book, I'll ask if they'll want to sign up to the newsletter, which will keep them up to date with Kickstarters or behind the scenes stuff. And then it's like that organic building up with your audience that way. And, you know, they're people you've met and have communicated with. And so that's doing those 29 conventions, as hard as they were, you know, some of them didn't really plan out. It was actually probably quite important showing your face and turning up and, you know, help those people then help you and support you on your next Kickstarter then, which has pretty much been the foundations of, I think, like the success of most of my Kickstarters.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the American audience, do you find are most of them just digital or
mainly
print?
But mainly print. What I try to do is try and like have a quite low shipping cost. You know, I try and get it down to like £5 to ship, you know, to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And try and add that on to like the goal of the Kickstarter. You know, to compensate for that like little bit of loss that you'd make on the postage by not onto the goal. So that helps people buy in, you know, to the comic from abroad.
Yeah.
Which is important because, you know, if you can get your comics into America and people passing it along and telling more people about it, then you know,
there
spreads.
Was a post that someone was saying about like the people who do the add $5 and we've got our thanks, or you put your name in the book or something, which people do not like that.
Yeah,
I would reconsider doing that if that were, you're thinking about it.
If you've got the first tier is nothing, you don't get a book, you don't get your name in it, you don't get anything like that, and it's just a thank you, you got to reconsider the way you're making your Kickstarter look, I think, haven't you? If that's the first, because I basically scroll through, I don't like that, don't want that one, don't want that one, I want that one, I'll pledge on it. I rarely scan the whole thing and go backwards and forwards. And if the first one is, £1, you don't get anything for that. That does stop me in my tracks, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, they said Ryan K. Lindsay's thing, that first thing you come to is like, it matters so much. And just to do so, put £2 and you've got our eternal thanks. So, fuck's sake. Yeah, really big time.
Yeah. Unless it's us, obviously, then everyone,
Just like that's just like e-begging. It's really don't like it.
It's like that buy me a coffee thing that people do.
Yeah. Well, I've come here to buy a comic and you're asking me just for a couple of quid for no reason. It kind of puts me up a little.
I think Kickstarter, like, it's just like, just keep it simple, the rewards as well. I used to do t-shirts. I had a red cap at the beginning, like a bunch of red caps that said "Make horror great again."
"Is it make Afterlight great again?" That'd be good, wouldn't it?
But then, like, I had them on my table at True Believers in my first year, and like the kid was like, "Oh, look at that!" And then this woman was shaking her head, like I think she thought it was like an American one. She didn't have her glasses on. I suppose. These are coming off the table, please. I'm not doing these.
Yeah. Left wingers need a sense of humour. We often say that.
I saw one was "Make Jungle Massive Again." One of those red.
Make Jungle Massive.
Honestly, I can just see you in the 90s saying "Jungle Massive" to your mates.
I couldn't, wear that, Nolan, without the risk of being chinned just by some stranger. So I would be concerned for the message and the red cap.
It has to be a brave stranger to mess with you, Dan.
Oof.
Yeah.
So, what are is your future goal then? I mean, obviously for the rest of this year, I'm guessing Ghost Island and Wendigo Wood. How many?
What do you mean? He's been on the show. What do you mean?
No, for the rest. You know what I mean?
Okay, right. Fair enough. Yeah.
I don't need to explain myself to you.
this high point.
Oh god, it's getting to that time of the evening. No, for the rest of the year. Obviously, you're going to be concentrating on finishing Ghost Island and Wendigo Wood.
Yeah.
Are there any ideas in your brain bubbling away for next year or something like that?
So, like, at the beginning of 2018, I had, like, the 2018 and 2019 completely slated out for comics.
Right.
Like Kickstarters and all that.
So okay. That's
coming to the end of this year, and then next year will probably be, like, the year of, like, trade backs, like Ghost Island and Wendigo Wood. And then stay awake, but for myself personally, it's just like learning to get better and like improve my skills. Because on Stay Awake, I actually learned to do the colours.
Oh, nice, as well. Yeah. Cool.
I learned that from a previous guest you'd had on, Michael K. Russell. I did.
Yeah, nice. Good guy.
That's brilliant.
Cool.
And you do the lettering as well, don't you?
I do the lettering now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it all kind of helps save money and gets the project done quicker.
It does.
I would recommend letterers. I would recommend writers kind of get at least an understanding of lettering, but if they can do their own, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And learn how to put a book together. That's the thing I'm trying to work on at the moment, is learn how to actually format a book. You know, that's the fucking mystery to me. I don't really understand the devil's window. You know what I mean? But it's sort of, you got to get a grip of that, because then it so helps with the creative process as well, doesn't it? You know, sizes of pages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was half expecting you, Jed, to say, like, I've done, after this year, I've done comics and moving into, like, equestrianism. And then 3 years of, like, just that, conquering it, and then moving on to something else.
Yeah,
and
you've completed it, photography.
I mean, looking at your website, you know, when you see the range of titles on there, you know, I think you're smashing it, dude. I think, really, considering that you've come on... I can't really say a late bloomer, because, like, now look at you, you're putting out so many titles, whether it be the digital or the physical. You're mastering Kickstarter, you know. I know you're quite a humble person, so just accept these comics I'm giving you now.
He'll give you a hug when he sees you.
Yeah, I'll hug anyone. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But
the judge warned you about that.
And my wife.
Yeah. I'm going to hug you senseless, Dan. You know it. And you'll love it.
You used a different word to hug, but go on.
But obviously, you know, everything's been a learning for you. You take it as a learning, don't you? I mean, like you say, you're going to do these trades for all the comic series, but that, obviously, you must be already making notes of, you know, postage and stuff for Kickstarters. Have you already sort of started planning that? Because that's going to be quite different, isn't it, to post out a trade than a single issue.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for the trade. Yeah, it's be a perfect bound, but I'm used to, like, with perfect bounds, because the Ghost Island started out as that. But it should work out okay. Ghost Island's like going to be 180 pages, which are probably quite
it's good
postage.
As
I say, I'm just trying to do like shorter series now, and like limit that from a learning process as well. Haven't done that. There's just going to be 100-page trades after that. Wendigo Wood and Stay Away. I'm just trying to bottle up ideas at the moment, because obviously I've got three series and then a one shot going on. It's, you kind of get carried away, as you can see. It's going to be five more Kickstarters this year, so it's just trying to balance it. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
I love it.
You've got to love it, and it clearly shows in the product as well, dude. So what conventions have you got over the next sort of couple of months? I'm guessing you're not doing another 25 by the end of the year.
No, mine's 25.
What have you cut that down to now, then? What is the number now?
So I'm not entirely sure, but I'm going to say it's probably like 8 or 9 now. I'm doing Edinburgh Comic Con next weekend.
Was there an Ellesmere Port one recently or something like that? Was there?
There was, yeah. Civic Hall, yeah. I was away for that, so I'm not sure how that went.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, and then there's Manchester MCM, hoping to get into that when that opens. London, both of them.
Okay.
Still waiting to hear back from Thought Bubble.
Yeah.
And I think...
I put my hotel for that as well, so hopefully we all get in.
Yeah, so have I. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Birmingham MCM. That's about it now, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and he's going to have plenty of awesome comics, especially if you like horror comics, because this is the sort of horror that I really like reading in comics, actually.
Yeah,
really, yeah, me too. Yeah, definitely. Really atmospheric. I like the fact you take chances and you go somewhere, man. Yeah. I hate safe horror. Yeah. I hate competitive safe horror. I really dislike it.
But that's also the place to go for it is horror.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it's all about something new, original, that simple idea that can be told well. Good production style and with maybe a bit of a twist in it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what you'd like is some of the early 2000 AD Future Shocks. I think they've started collecting them now.
Yeah,
and they're great twist in the tale stories, and they're written by people like Moore, Grant Morrison, all these sort of, you know, Pat Mills. They're all like really good writers have written them. You know, there's some really great stuff in there.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say as well, we've got submissions open on the Afterlight Comics website. You can, and it's always open all year. So if anybody would like to. Submit anything.
Publish
through us, cool. Then that's always open.
Yeah.
All right. And that would be from a sort of horror point of view, would it? Would it be mainly looking at horror stories?
Oh, yeah. Only horror, yeah. Because it works out for the benefit of the creator. You know, if we've got hopefully building up a horror audience now, that sort of work. And if you've got horror, then I'm sure they'll eat it up.
Yeah.
I've got a story about beetroot. You might
No, that's just horrific, Tony. It's not a horror story.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Have you done any sort of straight up horror conventions yet with the books?
I did Liverpool Horror Con. That went
what's
terribly.
That like?
It's terrible. it was not like because of what I had, or it was just like terrible for everybody. It was just really badly run. The guys ran off now with a lot of people's money that had tickets booked for London HorrorCon. I lost £100 from that as well.
Those days are behind us, but absolutely not.
Yeah,
we've seen a few things like that, haven't we? Yeah.
But the HorrorCons, there's one in Sheffield, I think it's supposed to be really good, and one in Bristol.
I've been to the Bristol one. That's good. That is good.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's not better nor worse. It's like a Comic Con, you know. There's people there for everything, isn't there?
Yeah.
With horror, it's people there for everything, not just comics. So,
yeah. Okay.
So definitely, folks, check out Joey's catalog because it's great stuff. Highly recommended. We love it. I mean, we've talked about the books on the show even before Joey came on, so we wanted to talk to him for a while now. And and like I say, if you're an artist or whatever out there, just get in touch with him, submit to it. So there you go. And and he's sticking around for the rest of the show because God bless him, God help him. But before that, do we have any shout outs, gents?
Yeah, I've got a load. Should I go?
Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a few Kickstarters coming, got to tell you. First off, from our pals, ex-guests, John Late and Matt Strott, Late Nights 2. I loved the first issue of this, and the second issue from what we've seen is looking fucking outstanding, and that hits Kickstarter. I think it's hitting it today as you hear this, I think.
Yeah, it shall be live now, I think.
Another project that I'll be back in is the Lang Walk Hame, which is about Peter Watson needing a piss and walking out the long walk home whilst needing a wee. Which hits Kickstarter today as well. He sent me the ash can of it, and it's fucking brilliant. It's just made me laugh so much. Obviously, we know Pete from his exposing himself on our Facebook page that time.
Oh, excellent, yeah.
Do you remember when he did the stand pose for us, didn't he?
I've got that saved to the old thing.
For the bank,
Hard drive.
Slang Pictorial Fort, still on Kickstarter, still storming it. Yeah. Nicky Boy Prolix has killed it with that. He's about 350%, I think, last time I looked.
Nice.
What's the other one? So the guys who did March of the Robots, have you been following the guys who've been doing this? So the main three I've been following is Andy Hanks, who's just done a robot a day, and he looks brilliant. So
great.
Good.
Yeah.
Really good. Stuart, our pal Stuart Moraine, he's done like a comic strip every day.
Yeah.
He's done like a fucking some work going on with that project. Yeah. And Charles Raymond's done some great little robots that are making me chuckle every day, so that's been really good. Big shout out to Alan Henderson, who sent Don't Judge Me, Penned Gwyn Treasury Edition. I got that through in the post, got a bit early because I got a pull quote on it, obviously. Shout out to Adam Falp, who sent me Living in Sin, which I shall start reading today, so after we finish recording. It looks very interesting, about a guy guarding hell. Really nice idea. I think me, him, and Tom McCurry are going to have a bit of a sort of Jack Kirby loving at an event soon. And also thanks to Johnny Cannon and an anonymous listener who we don't know who it is, who sent us some artwork the other day. So Johnny, brilliant past guest. I've just, literally just been speaking to him on Twitter, and hopefully going to see him. We'll probably see him next weekend, Joey, actually. Awesome. At Edinburgh. He sent us some artwork. It's just a little thank you for coming on the show, which people do not have to do. I'd like to say that. It's just really nice of him. And anonymous listener paid for some artwork. So we got two bits of artwork through him. So he was not allowed to tell us who it was. So we don't know who you are, but...
thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's like really, amazing. Really good.
Yeah.
I had that turn up and the Spanish Masters book on the same day. It was like Christmas.
Sweetness.
Yeah. Came
sweetness,
early.
Yeah, really good. I think that's it for me. You're gonna do the 100th.
So yeah. In a second, before I do, okay. I just want to give a big shout out to Gary from Comics Anonymous.
He was
obviously at Dunfermline, and it sounds like Dunfermline was a cracking
success. It does. I fancy that next year now. Yeah. I was tempted just to jump in a car this year, but. Yeah, it looks really good.
Gary from Comics Anonymous, he dropped by and picked up the Ian Kennedy art book for me.
Oh, nice.
And got him to sign it, because that looks, apparently it's like oversized as well, sort of book, and like that's glorious. If you don't know Ian Kennedy's work, just look at some of it, because it's amazing.
Oh, so good.
So good. I discovered, I've forgotten who's putting this book out actually.
Is it it's the people who do all the British stuff, isn't the ones you talked about before, isn't it?
I swear it's like a gallery sort of people or something. I've forgotten what it is.
But it looks like I need to get a copy myself.
Looks like a glorious book that maybe not enough people know about, so we'll probably talk about it when it arrives. I'll probably just talk about how amazing it is, so stay tuned for that. So thanks, Gary. And also,
speaking of Scotland, if anyone didn't hear earlier, I'm going to be at Edinburgh on Saturday, so if you're Edinburgh, come and say hi.
Stay away from him.
Tommy Dunn. Yeah, please do. Yeah. Unless you're a bit of a James Hunt, then stay away from me, because I've got a low tolerance for idiots.
And a big shout out to Tom from That Comic Smell for repping our t-shirt.
And the only reason he wore it is because he put a quick thing out, didn't he? Like, vote for which t-shirt, and obviously the three of us straight away voted.
Yeah.
For our own t-shirt.
Russian bot network.
Which is a robot network, not bottoms. So thank you very much for that. And glad that everyone had a great time at Dunfermline. Want to hear more about that show in the future. And yes, we are recording episode 200. It is approaching. It is only a few weeks away.
Yeah.
And we have a venue.
Very excited.
Yep. And we have a date, May the 4th. Don't start your Star Wars jokes. It's just it's just May the 4th, which is also Free Comic Book Day, I've been informed. If you're going
and
to
we are a short walk from the comic shops in London, so a short walk from Orbital and Gosh, leaving Forbidden Planet if you want to go there.
That thing where everyone, there's a load of people mob into a shop, just take stuff and then F off. I mean,
oh, I know.
We'll have to see if we've got the numbers for that.
If there's enough people, we will be planning crimes as part of the 200th.
But
come along.
The plan is thus: we are rocking up in London at the Two Chairmen, isn't that right, Tony?
Yeah, it's the Two Chairmen. It's 39 Dartmouth Street, Westminster. The nearest tube is either Westminster or St James's Park. It's like a 1 minute walk from St James's Park, and we are upstairs. It's a right old school pub. And we're upstairs in the bar that you can buy your drinks upstairs, and you can order food and everything. They're going to allow a bit of food, I reckon. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, we are literally just going to rock up there with some recording equipment. It's going to be a Three Amigos show. With we'll get
might invite the odd guest up, might we?
Whoever turns up on the day, we'll probably we'll get you to ask some questions.
We'll probably be in the show,
involved a bit. It's just going to be a good laugh.
And there may be some collector's edition items.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have to give away. There's going to be some charity auction type stuff going on as well, I think, as well.
Go to our Facebook group, Richard Chief's organising, just sort of collecting up if anyone's got any spare books or a little bit of artwork or something like that, we're going to auction it off for little heroes, or raffle it off, maybe. Mm. Yeah.
There is literally there's no reserving of tickets. There's nothing like this. We're just rocking up, going to have a laugh, and we'd like you to join us if you can on the day.
That'd be fantastic.
We're going to be there from 12 till 5, aren't we, gents?
Yeah.
I believe. And we're going to record. We're basically going to start the recording probably around 2:30 for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. Are we going to say, yes, this episode of the Awesome Comics Podcast was recorded in front of a live studio audience? The only reason I say that is because I've been watching a lot of Cheers recently.
What?
Yeah, it's on in the morning when I'm having my Weetabix. Anyway, that's another.
Okay.
We need to stay awesome at the end so we can cut that into every show.
Yeah, we want...
Yeah, we need everyone to say it, don't we? Yeah. Apart from me, I'm not saying it. Yeah.
We want the people downstairs to think, what on earth is going on up there?
What are those wankers doing up there?
Yeah. No, but it's going to be a laugh. So yeah, May the 4th, we'd love to see you there. We're going to keep shouting about it for the next couple of weeks. So yeah,
and there's a few people already booking their train and bus tickets and stuff like that. Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, really pleased.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fucking chuckle. I tell you now, that's what it'll be.
It's just going to be a group of people just talking comics and having fun, and then there's going to be a show recording in between. So who knows how that will go
if we remember.
So go get your free comic books and then come and join us and like talk about comics for the day. Yeah. We'd love to see you there.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have some. No Brow will be donating some books, so there'll be a little raffle. You might get yourself like a 20 quid book for a 50p raffle ticket or something. So there's a bit of that. And I bought some raffle tickets because they arrived from Amazon today.
Amazing. And if you can't make it, you know, our lovely people from another country, other countries in the world, or perhaps you just can't make it on the day, or you're not well, or anything like that.
Don't like us.
We still want you involved. So it's going to be, because it's just going to be the three of us, and God knows what else will happen, it will probably be like an Ask the Awesome Pod anything kind of show. If you've got any questions that you want to ask us, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I will hold on to them, not tell the other guys what they are, and then I'll drop them on the day. And see what they're like. So email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com with the headline episode 200 question. So there you go. There's that one.
Sweet.
Yeah, a lot of shout outs. We do a lot of shouting. But it's always worth it.
There's a lot going on in comics small press at the moment. There's a lot of Kickstarters. There's a lot of new books coming out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little events happening. There's a bit of a buzz going on at the moment. I'm feeling it again at the moment.
Yeah. And seeing as we're feeling good about comics, let's recommend some comics, shall we? Let's finish this one strong. Who wants to go first?
Do you want to go first, V? Because I'm going to throw myself into your one a bit as well with another similar title, aren't I?
Nice.
Well, I've got two.
Oh, okay.
There's one I'm briefly going to talk about, which will tie into it. I'm not going to talk about it too much at the moment. But the first one that I'm going to talk more about is this book that I picked up after... I do the weekly... We all do it. We pick our favourite covers from the Comixology browse each week. We don't necessarily buy these books, but you know, it's whatever cover looks good. Look for it. Look for our Twitter feed to see what appeals to us every week. And there was a cover I saw that I thought, this looks quite good. I looked at a couple of pages, and it was an original sort of graphic novel on Comixology, came out this week. I looked at a couple of pages and thought, I think I want the printed copy of this. Went to Amazon and immediately ordered it to be delivered the next day. And this is a Cretaceous. Which is from Oni Press. I haven't bought an Oni book in quite some time. I kind of forget how good their books are printed and how such a nice, lovely delivered sort of size book. This is from Tad Galusha. It is basically, it's the story of a T-Rex in the late Cretaceous period. And when tragedy strikes its family, it embarks on a harrowing journey to reunite with the remaining member of the group before they are separated permanently. This beautiful, absolutely beautiful. There's no words. It's all actions and sound effects. And it is like it's the closest thing I've seen to like an animal documentary in the pages of a book. It's stunning. And it's nice to see, you follow the T-Rex. It's nice to see a book where you're following something that is normally the villain of a story. Do you know what I mean? Because T-Rex is normally. Tad's work is absolutely stunning, and it really shows the harsh brutality of nature as well. All great nature documentaries. I don't know about you guys, but I love watching nature documentaries. And you always see like the harshness of reality that you can't. You know, you see like you know, animals being hunted, and you, just the way it's brutal, it's unforgiving, and this plays out very much like that. And it, you see different sort of species of dinosaur. There's one moment where one dinosaur gets eaten by another, and then it follows that. It's almost like the circle of life, like the dinosaur that's just preyed on something then becomes,
well, like
prey.
In The Lion King.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, okay.
I never thought you'd reference that on this show.
Jesus. I've never seen it, but yeah, there you go.
You've never seen it. That's a topic for another day. Yeah, and this is
Dan's sending me porn again.
Oh, Dan, it's disgraceful. Stop doing it, you filthy monster.
I've not sent porn.
No. He's always trying to drop you in it, isn't he, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I happily send you porn. I don't know.
Oh, but anyway, yeah, this book is 150 pages. You've got the story, which is both pulse pounding and heartbreaking at the same time. I rinsed through it. It's brilliant. There's a field guide for the Cretaceous period in the back, which shows you what North America was like at that time in the world, as well as like diagrams of the dinosaurs, as you know, the classic sort of you know, the books you had when you were a kid where you see an illustration of a dinosaur and the size of a human being next to it. You know,
yeah.
That was great. There's also those moments where there are dinosaurs that, even though no words are said, you immediately you take a side. You know, you like, some of them are just bastards and you want to see them get their comeuppance. It's just really, really well done. I was hugely impressed with this book. It's going on my list of probably end of year sort of things, I think.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's probably going to pick. It's a lovely A5 book. Because, you know, A5 is a lovely size for graphic novel, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I picked up an A5 today from Good Comics.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Yeah, and it's a great little format. You know, I think A5 is a really sort of handy sort of size as well, especially travelling. If you're going to travel with it, you know, yeah. I highly recommend it. I mean, I picked it up from Amazon. You'll see it. You saw it in a comic book store, didn't you, Tony? You
saw it. Yeah, it was in Forbidden Planet. I saw it this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yesterday, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has come out now. So I think it's probably £12-13, or like the digital's like £7-8, which I just went straight for the print copy, and I do not regret it. It's brilliant. And you can follow him at Tad Galusha. I haven't been aware of any of his work before.
No, that's a cool name as well.
He wrote it, he illustrated it and coloured it, and he's worked on a TMNT and Ghostbusters, or maybe that's been crossed over. So yeah, look out for that one. Cretaceous. I think a lot of people liked the cover when I posted it, so it certainly sold me. So that's mine this week. But there is another brief mention. Obviously, I talked about TKO Publishing recently, and how I loved Sarah. I think it's Sarah, actually, because I heard Garth Ennis on a podcast talking about it, and it is Sarah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I also, all of their issue ones, well, pretty much most of their issue ones, are free downloads at the moment on their website, as well as you can get all of the issues. But another one that I read, I'm working my way through them. I managed to read the Fearsome Dr. Fang.
Well, we haven't read this one. Yeah, it's good.
It's another fantastic book. Absolutely fantastic. It's got a real pulpy adventure comic feel. There's great characterization. Story twist that I didn't expect. There are villains who may not be as villainous as you think. Wonderful design. That I think I'm going to talk about in more in depth, because I think I'll pick up the rest of the issues, and that's why I think TKO's way of working is pretty good. Because download the first issue, try it doesn't cost you anything, but because I like the first issue, I'm going to get another one. I'm going to you can get them at your leisure.
You got me into them again, because I've ordered Sarah the hard copy, and I've you sent me the link to we talked about him. What did we talk about this artist? What book was it we talked about?
Enforcer, which is
Enforcer, brilliant. And I'd seen him on Undertow and a couple of other books. It's Artem Trakanov. And I bought Seven Deadly Sins on digital today, which is another TKO book. Written by Z Chun.
Yeah.
Who I think is one of the owners or publishers, isn't he?
He's one of the guys that runs it.
Yeah. And fucking hell, this book, man. This is one of the best things I've read in a long time.
I've downloaded this and I flicked through it. I haven't read it yet.
Jesus. Trakanov is a beast. Mate, you will love his work. He's so good. What happened this week is Vince sent us a link to say, oh, look at the Tracking Off art, because he knows I sort of hovered over it a couple of years ago. And I was sitting on the bog, and I bought a page immediately while sitting on the loo at this guy's art. And then I thought you were going to do Seven Deadly Sins. I thought you were going to review it today, Vince. So I read it. I read it this morning. I know, like you, I was just going to read the first issue, sort of freebie. Yeah. And I thought, nah. So I just bought the whole thing and just tore through it in one reading. I was out there waiting for Aaron, actually. I went there. I was a bit early waiting for him. Then it took me an hour, and I just read it all through. And it's kind of like a really, really sort of violent Western, a sort of Dirty Dozen. This is not one of my books I'm recommending, just sort of mention it. But it's sort of a sort of Dirty Dozen mission kind of thing, with the most disparate, unpleasant, almost just grotesque group of bandits, outlaws, sort of gunmen that you will ever find.
Trakhanov's art is perfect for that sort of
just
looking.
Unbelievable. One of them's like a cannibal, one of them's a sort of civil war sort of deserter, one of them's this Irish girl who's a sort of lock picker, and it's just so good, and it just changes direction constantly, and it doesn't end where you think it is, and it's just genius. I've never seen the indigenous people of North America drawn better than in this comic, I've got to tell you.
Really?
Just outstanding. Yeah, so I'd recommend that one. In fact, they're hitting a good rate at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they're doing
TK, everything they're bringing out.
Yeah, and we might be talking more about them very soon.
But, very soon. Yeah.
It stays tuned to that. But I just love it. It does work. It does work. Sort of looking at it, as soon as you see issue one, you're like, right, I need to get more of this. You know, I didn't know you bought...
And it's shelf porn as well. Their books are shelf porn. They definitely are.
Yeah. You know? I didn't know you bought the whole lot, though, dude, of Seven Deadly
Sins. Yeah, I read the whole trade this morning, yeah.
And if you want to see that work of Trakhanov, because he's putting some art pages on, I'll put a link in the show notes. I retweeted it anyway. Just go on the page and have a look anyway. There are some covers, which are obviously the higher price stuff, but his pages...
Like $100 for a page of this geezer's art, and this is next level stuff.
Yeah,
genuinely.
Yeah. So definitely check it out. We're already great fans of his work.
Yeah, Turncoat, which he did with Alex Pagnadale as well, is another example of his great art, which is a sort of sci-fi version of his art.
Yeah.
But this, it really works for a Western with me. The grotesque, dirty, unpleasant, you know, toothless villains, and it's just incredible stuff.
So do you want to talk about your book, or shall we throw it over to one of our
other so I've got a very brief mention, and then I'll do a longer one. So shall I do the brief mention, then we'll hand it over? The brief mention is a book, and I'm not gonna go on about it, because I don't think it needs it. I just think you need to be told that it's good. It comes out, it's up for pre-order at the moment on the First Spark Books site, and it's for sale as of the 1st of May. You can get it, and it's Leaf by Nicole Bates. It's again, funny enough, an A5 book. It's just a story of a fox, and he plays with a leaf, and he chases it around, and he discovers other animals in the woods, and he interacts with them, and sometimes it goes well, and sometimes it goes badly, and
that
it's just
amazing.
It's just, that's it, that's the whole concept, that's all I needed. That's all I wanted, and it's just and her art has got that sort of naturalistic look to it. It's got that sort of gentle kids book thing going on, and it's just a beautiful little book, and I just sort of read it on the train home. I got a preview copy, because I'm sort of I help out Aaron with some stuff, and I got a preview copy, and I absolutely loved it. And awesome. you if you're having a bad day, and it's a kids book, but if you're having a bad day, I'd recommend it to anyone. So you can go to Fair Spark Books, just look them up on Twitter, go to their website, and you can pre-order a copy there. Absolutely cracking stuff. That's two for two for Nicole for me. That the anxiety book she did, Anxiety Me, I think it was called, was another beautiful sort of little book, and this is another just sort of gentle, just something that is just a good thing to have in your day, and it made me smile, and it's just a beautiful little thing, a little book that can sit on your shelf, and great for kids, I have to say. So that's just my brief mention on that one. There you go.
Shall we throw it over to Mr. Butcher?
Yeah,
happy to pick up the ball. Is that how that analogy works?
Let's hope so, eh?
Yeah, otherwise I made a fool of myself. I read The Immortal Hulk, the first trade.
Oh, yeah.
I've got recommended this by Gareth Hopkins and Sarah, both friends of the show. It's an interesting read. I feel like I think there's a second trade out, and the first one's made me want to pick up the second one immediately.
Oh, brilliant.
I haven't read Hulk in a long while,
But the conceit here is that when Bruce Banner dies, he will turn into the Hulk that night and go and seek revenge. So it's an interesting premise.
Yeah.
And it plays throughout the story. The artist, it's written by Al Ewing, who's a former guest on the show. I tried to tell him that I really enjoyed it, but he's blocked me on Twitter, so I can't do that. And it's drawn by a chap named Joe Bennett, which I'm not familiar with his work, but he's kind of got a Brian Hitch kind of like feel to it. One little complaint about it, like every page bleeds. There's no gutters in between the pages. And there's a couple of times where I've read a page and thought, oh, that didn't work. And then I've realized it's not a spread. I've got to read down, not across. So,
okay.
It's got a couple of 9-panel grids, which I know you're not a massive fan of, Tony.
Well, no, I don't mind. I just think they're overused. You know, it's obviously like them in Watchmen and stuff. You know, it's like,
There's some really lovely work, really interesting thing to do with the Hulk. I always think, what can you do with the Hulk that hasn't already been done? And then they bring out stuff like World War Hulk and stuff like this. And I really enjoyed it. Yeah, so I'm going to be grabbing the second trade and seeing where the story goes, because it's got a nice, interesting little hook, which I don't really want to spoil for readers or potential readers, but it's nice. Yeah, a good one.
Cool. I might have to seek that out, because I have heard nothing but good things about
it. I think Martin Simmons is in volume 2, isn't he, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Oh, he does some work. Yeah, I won't be that bastard who doesn't mention everyone. So it's written by Al Ewing, Joe Bennett, the penciler, Ruse Jose, the inker, Paul Mounts, colour artist, and it's got VCs Corey Petit and Travis Lanham doing the letters.
Nice.
There you go. Some of the covers, you got like the pencil covers at the back, which just absolutely amazing, and some of the design work, which I love seeing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Nice. It's nice, good stuff. Nice.
Cool. So
before Tony signs us off, you got one more left, haven't you, Tony?
I have.
So before Joey, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
I had a Kickstarter come through yesterday. Pure Dead Mental by James McCulloch.
Hey, great cover.
You did the cover, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah, I did the cover on this one.
Fantastic. It's a black and white anthology of 4 short horror stories. I shot through it as soon as it came through the door. Big fan of James's work.
Yeah, love James.
One thing I'd like to know about this, because when I saw the Kickstarter, God bless James, he was always like, it's very dark, very twisted, it may not be for everyone, but if you like that, this is for you. But it is very dark, it's not for everyone. is it pretty dark and twisted inside?
It's more than dark and trust. It's great. If you're familiar with James's work, you know he's great. He's telling stories, and if you like his stuff, it's more of that. It makes my horror stuff look PG. So well done, James.
Jesus,
that's mine.
Yeah, cool. that's cool. That's landing in people's sort of post now.
I've literally just messaged him to say I'll see you at the weekend, and he's messaged me back literally as we're talking there, so that's good.
James.
Cool.
Right, Tony, sign us off.
So my last one is one that I sent to you I think the week before last, guys, and I said, fuck me, you got to read this, and it's Ronin Island by Boom. Written by Greg Pak, art by Giannis Milogiannis, colours Irma, they don't make it easy, do they?
No.
Irma Nivila. Letters by Simon Boland. There you go. So there's a mysterious attack wipes out all the major cities in 19th century Japan, Korea, and China. And the survivors build their own little societies. And there's a little society of Ronins who build up their lives again on this island. There's Hannah, who is an orphan girl, and Kenichi, who is the son of a samurai leader. They don't really like each other, and they sort of compete in a competition to be the greatest warrior on the island. This is obviously sort of an annual, biannual type thing. And just as the competition ends, a huge wooden ship arrives on the shores of the island, and it bears the seal of the shogun. And they well, this can't be the shogun. The shogun's been dead for 30 years. And a general from the ship walks ashore, and he's in sort of full battle armor, and he demands they show fealty to his shogun, sort of thing. And they're saying, well, we've heard this a lot. We've heard of shoguns. He said, well, you're an island of Ronin. This can't be right. You need to join our army. And I'm going to spoil this because I think it's worth it, because this is a first issue setup, and I think to not mention this wouldn't do credit to what the book's actually about. But what happens, so if you're going to buy this and you don't hear it, then just fast forward a couple of minutes. But what happens is, just as they're having that discussion, a mutant army invades the other side of the island. And it's just this brilliant, like, moment. You think you didn't see that coming, you know. You thought, oh, this is going to be the Ronin defending their island against the Shogun's sort of army. But no, there's like this army of sort of mutants, and all the people on this island, you discover all these people are warriors. So the little old lady who's kind of the leader of the island, she picks up a sort of curved sword, and she's part of them. They literally ends with them all legging it towards this group of mutants who are killing farmers on the other side of the island. It's just so well written. The pacing in it is just really, really good. I think issue 2 comes out next week, I think it is. Issue 1 sold out, and I think it's gone back to a second print. I got mine digitally, so I read it digitally. But it looks a little bit like a sort of traditional manga style. The only sort of small fault I had with it is that I'm not a big manga reader, and I found a lot of the faces very similar. I think it's a problem I find with manga quite a lot.
Right.
It's got more of a sort of American... It's a crossover. It's like a manga crossed with an American comic. So it's full colour. The pages are much more rendered. There's much more detail than your average sort of page-turner manga comic, I think it's fair to say. And it's obviously done in a monthly sort of format. It's got that sort of heightened melodrama to some extent that you get in manga. You know, everyone's sort of very sort of melodramatic and over the top with the sort of emotions and stuff like that. And like a lot of manga, it's got that sort of great sense of sort of non-stop action. It's also got that, what you get in some manga, you get like almost like an adherence to the honor system that you get perhaps more in Japan than you get in the West.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's that sort of rank structure and people obeying like the bosses of companies and, you know, the samurai's bosses and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's organized, the pages are organized more in a Western way. So it's laid out as if it was a Western comic. Just some of the action in it is really good. I really enjoy Greg Pak's writing. I think he's a really underrated writer. Everything from sort of Planet Hulk all the way through to, he did some great Eternal Warrior stuff at Valiant that I really enjoyed. You might know the artist. He did Prophet. He did a couple of issues of Prophet, which were really good back in the day. Nice. You remember the original when Prophet was just sort of this really sort of imaginative story. He's done some new Ultimates. And he's done some Turtles work. Just a really strong opener. I've done a couple of opening issues, and I know in Incursion the second issue kind of let me down a bit, but I'm hoping this is going to be better because it sets up for the action to keep rolling, which I'm hoping it's going to in this one. It was going to be a mini series, but I think WonderCon's this weekend. I think it's been yesterday and today,
yeah.
And they've announced at WonderCon that it's going to be an ongoing. So it's really promising. And I've never pressed the subscribe button on Comixology, but I did it for this one, so it'll land in my inbox. Do any of you guys subscribe to books on there? I don't know.
I do. I've only done it with one. And
okay. Oh,
God, I can't remember the name now. Give me a couple of minutes.
Right, okay.
Where is it? Oh, it's one of my favourite books at the moment. I can't believe
it. So presumably it just lands every time an issue comes out. They just charge your account and it lands.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's immediate. Yeah, yeah. Outer Darkness, okay. That's the one. You know,
okay. Yeah. I just really like the idea of... I mean, often... we get the post-apocalyptic world of comics is sometimes a little bit oversaturated, I'm going to say. Sometimes it's a bit too zombie, sometimes it's a bit too punky, you know, cyberpunky sort of thing. But this is like a really fresh attempt. You know, you've got an island full of warriors, these people are all trained as warriors, and then you only realize that as the book goes on. And you've got the sort of the fact that everywhere outside this island there's clearly like just hell going on. You know, these sort of, you know, mutants fighting warriors and armies, and you know, all this shit is going on outside of this island that sits in the sort of mist in the sea. But suddenly, the hell comes to this island, and you realise that their whole society, you know, where they've been self-sufficient for all these sort of donkey's years, is just going to fall. And it's just so well. It's just such a great setup. Really, really good. I'm really interested to see where it's going to go. So I'm all over this series. And awesome. They've got some absolutely outstanding covers as well. Some real...
Brilliant. Yeah, the cover of issue 1 is beautiful. The lighting on issue 1 is beautiful.
Yeah, they kind of sort of... It's almost like a traditional Japanese art style. They sort of... almost like a faux version of that with a sort of the modern comic sensibility added to it. Really, really beautiful stuff. Nice. Yeah, so that's out of Boom. I can't remember how much it was in Comixology, but buy it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, awesome.
Good. So, there you go. That's for God's sake, check out the show notes this week because there is loads of amazing comics and stuff that you haven't heard of before to check out, which is always brilliant. Also brilliant is our guest. Thank you again, Joe, for joining us this week.
Oh, been good. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Long time coming.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we're really looking forward to actually meeting you at a convention. Lord knows you.
Yeah, I'll see you on Saturday, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Cool.
So, and we hope you enjoyed this episode out there. Let us know what you thought, or if you disagree with us on anything. But who would disagree with us?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Or are you mad?
No. But if you are mad, then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be posting up the latest guests. We keep threatening to do a poll, but we haven't done one in ages. So
no, we'll never do one.
Who knows?
Never,
there'll be amusing memes or GIFs at some point, I'm sure. But if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and join the group Awesome Comics Talk if you're on Facebook as well, because there's a great community going on there.
Exploded this week.
Yeah.
Loads this week on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about making comics, comic conventions, just, you know, what books are you reading at the moment? There's no hard selling of Kickstarters.
We've had a good conversation, I think, today and yesterday about rights issues.
Yeah.
A good one about, you know, how to get ISBN numbers, that sort of thing. Yeah, there's some real help going on for people on there. Yeah, really good stuff.
I mean, Facebook is normally like an endless pit of fire, but there is one thing, good, decent thing on there, and that's the Awesome Comics Talk group.
Yeah.
So join it if you do that sort of social media. Thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, or if you've got the Podbean app or however. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about the show and tons of these awesome comics that people need to know about. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Podpegging.
I was ready for that one because he threatened it.
You
were,
you know, I told you that one earlier. Yeah.
And you're not going to hear an outtake of why he said that. You're just not. So just do the math, people. Do the math. And where can people find us all online, etc.? Tony?
everyonanything.blogspot.co.uk. 4's gone up this week, put 4 up. Or SISEZOHYZ.
Brilliant. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes. Yay. Loving it at the moment, Dan.
Thank you.
It's great. It's cracking. I can tell you're enjoying it as well. Yeah.
I sure am. Yeah. Lots of fun.
I sure am. God, you're a smooth bastard.
On Wednesday's page is a bit of a callback to like 90s Image comics with people jumping out of jets.
Nice. Yeah.
So look forward to that one.
Yeah.
You guys have seen a peek of that already.
Yeah, you're in for a treat, people. You're in for a treat. you can follow me online, whether it be Instagram or Twitter, @JesterDiablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. And our lovely guest, Joey, where can people find you and your comics, my friend?
Twitter, I'm on Joey Afterlight. Afterlight Comics is on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and the website is afterlightcomics.com. Digital and physical copies of the comics are all on there.
Nice.
Cool.
Be sure to check out the website and and follow Joey on social media, because that's how you'll find out about the new books coming out. So yeah, there you go, folks. Be another cracking one. Stay tuned to find out what more surprises we've got in store on the lead up to episode 200. It's pretty much we're sprinting towards 200 with all the guests we've got coming up, and then we're just gonna have a break for half a year. It's just gonna be us for another half a year after 200.
Christ.
Yeah, what's wrong with that, Tony? Do you like Danny? He doesn't like spending time with us, Dan.
You're a liar.
Tony does like it. I love it.
We do.
Yeah, says the boy who wasn't here last week. Anyway,
that 200 show is going to be interesting. The closer it gets, the more fucking nervous I'm getting about it. But
why are you getting nervous about it?
I don't know.
Is it because you're a never nude? Anyway, thank you very much for listening, folks. From Dan, Tony, Joe, and myself, go forth, read lots of comics, have a brilliant week, and as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Thank you very much. See ya.
See ya.
Love you.